And welcome to a brand new episode of Inside the Ropes here on the main feed. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by Sondra. Hi, Sondra, how are you?
Hi, Kenny. I'm doing all right. I am still not healthy, but I am getting there. I am really trying very, very hard. Drinking tons of tea and whatnot, sitting next to me. But it's, you know, it's been kind of a busy week trying to catch up with podcasts and stuff. And my husband turned 40 this past week, so that was kind of an event. And we decided to, I mean, I had to work on his actual birthday, but we had a really great time going out the next night. His parents took us out to dinner and we went to see Book of Mormon, which was a fantastic show and especially hilarious to me being raised like super conservative Christian, like a show that just takes the piss out of missionary work and all sorts of things. Yeah, it was fantastic. Like, I definitely recommend that show. And so I've had a pretty decent week, even though it's been super busy. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I feel like I don't stop podcasting now, but that's fine.
I understand that feeling today.
Lots of prep going on for everything, you know. So yeah, it's all good. Working on some new live guests, so that's fun.
Getting excited for New York and like 2 weeks. It's crazy.
lots to talk about. I guess one of the things to bring up is let's just start with the most baffling of all news. Kurt Angle comes out on Raw and tells us that his farewell opponent is going to be Baron Corbin. Where were you when you got the news and what was your response?
I was at work. Alan Provin texted me the news because he was quite upset about this particular situation. And I laughed. I just laughed. That was my response, was, of course, it's going to be Baron Corbin. And the thing is, like, it's funny because when you watch the clip on YouTube of Kurt Angle making the announcement that he's going to face Baron Corbin, the boos are not so deafening. Like, they did some sound work in that particular YouTube clip, because from what I gather from people who watched all of Raw, people were none too thrilled with the idea that Baron Corbin is going to be Kurt Angle's retirement opponent. And I can see why. I would say it's a baffling decision, but if you look at the storyline on Raw, right, it actually makes sense story-wise. The problem is that it's Baron fucking Corbin, and you really want Kurt Angle to go out on a high, right? Like, you want him to go out on a really interesting match. I think Chad Gable actually would have been an interesting retirement match for Kurt Angle, because Chad Gable, you know, admiring Kurt Angle the way that he has, and obviously they had their match on Raw that was okay. But yeah, I mean, Kurt Angle versus Baron Corbin, talk about going out with a whimper, right? Like, we talked about it on Retro Raw. He debuted with Tiger Ali Singh and he might face Baron Corbin in his final outing. Like, what a career bookend. It's a good thing that there was a lot of better stuff in the middle, right? What did you think?
Absolutely baffled. Like, absolutely couldn't believe that this was what they did. But so, I should say that WrestleVotes have come out today and said, from a source, Angle versus Corbin is being reconsidered. WWE did not expect this kind of negative reaction, and thus they don't want such a negative feel to Kurt's final contest.
Like, how did they not expect such a negative reaction? It's Baron Corbin. Like, does Baron Corbin have something on Vince McMahon? They seem to see Baron Corbin as a much bigger star than Baron Corbin actually is, right?
He's like a modern day Bradshaw, only like a nice person.
Yeah, pretty much. And it's just, I don't understand how anyone in WWE thought, oh yeah, this is going to be the big payoff. But I guess maybe it's, you know, I mean, this is the company that's very obsessed with authority angles and obsessed with, you know, corporate drama and that kind of thing all throughout their show. Oh boy, will we get to some more of that? But maybe they see the Baron Corbin taking over Kurt Angle's general managership as still this big slight to Kurt Angle. And of course, Kurt Angle is going to still be upset with Baron Corbin because Baron Corbin just gets under his skin. The thing is, the story is there. It's just the wrong performer, you know? Like, Baron
It
Corbin's just
makes
not
sense. It's a
interesting.
long-term story.
There's logic to it. It's Baron Corbin at the end of the day.
The other thing, like, that I was thinking about is like the Kurt Angle Chad Gable match. Like, I saw Chad Gable posting on his like social media about how like, you know, like he got like Kurt Angle to sign his VHS of Kurt Angle's It's True, It's True. And like that must have meant the world to him. I know how much it meant to Joe Hendry when he got to face Kurt Angle, so like it means a lot. But I mean, Kurt Angle to me, I just don't know how he's going to pull off a WrestleMania match. So maybe the idea was that he would, maybe the idea was that he would just do a quick kind of beat Baron Corbin very decisively. But like you say, it's kind of going out in a whimper. So it feels weird.
Well, and the other part of the discussion is that, you know, because I watched clips of Kurt Angle versus Chad Gable. I wanted to watch the whole thing, I just didn't have time. But it's a match that you think should be really, really great, right? It's one of those matches that's like, that's the dream match. Like Kurt Angle versus Chad Gable 5 years ago would have even could have been incredible, right? But it's just getting uncomfortable for me to watch Kurt Angle in the ring. Like we've seen him wrestle on Raw more often recently than he really should. And, you know, for Kurt Angle, didn't he face Apollo Crews like a couple weeks ago? And that's great for Apollo Crews to get to wrestle Kurt Angle. And maybe like Kurt wanted to wrestle him because Apollo Crews is a very good wrestler who just doesn't necessarily fit in the WWE landscape. But in terms of in-ring talent, he's excellent, right? So I like the idea that they're giving Kurt kind of a farewell tour. I like when they send people off like that and give them, you know, opponents that they've never gotten to face. It's like when Kushida was leaving New Japan, he got to wrestle Tanahashi on his way out, which was awesome, right? Like that kind of thing is super cool. But the unfortunate part is that Kurt Angle is not looking well when he wrestles. Like it's getting very uncomfortable to see him in the ring.
Am I the only one that kind of feels like the most of what he does now is a German suplex and he looks in pain while he's doing it?
Yes. Yep. And you can see like mentally, you can see that Kurt Angle can still like put a match together and you can see that he wants to still be Kurt Angle, but his body is just failing him. And it's the same kind of thing when, I mean, I know that I'm not the biggest fan of him, but when you watch The Undertaker wrestle at WrestleMania the past few years, it's uncomfortable. And that's been part of my problem with that, right? Is that like it's getting uncomfortable to watch some of these guys wrestle, and I don't want them to put themselves through this much physical harm and through this much pain and through this much torture. It's not worth it. So it's one of those things where like maybe Kurt Angle even having a WrestleMania send-off isn't the greatest idea, but at this point they kind of have to do it, obviously. Like we're a couple weeks out from WrestleMania. They've announced that this is going to happen. They've announced his retirement, but it just kind of makes me wish that he would have done this sooner. Before he looked like he was in so much pain all the time.
Yeah, it's like a maybe. I mean, Finn had said it on the we recorded the Power Slam podcast earlier on today, and he was saying, you know, it's maybe like a couple of years too late, and it probably is.
Yeah.
But let's speak about nicer things, though. Did you watch NXT UK last night?
I did not watch NXT UK. I had to watch Great American Bash. So I
But
have
you know
only
the review
the
of
Pete Dunne versus Walter?
yes.
Yes. I'm so excited about that. I mean, it seems like that's where things were leading, right? I mean, Walter obviously debuted at TakeOver UK, Blackpool, whatever you call that show, and faced off with Pete Dunne. So it was the logical conclusion that Walter was going to face Pete Dunne for the UK Championship. And I'm glad that it's happening at TakeOver. I think that that's awesome. I am so excited for that match. Like, that's probably the match I'm looking forward to most on the TakeOver card, actually. Like Velveteen Dream Matt Riddle, which I don't think is officially announced, but it seems to be going that way, is going to be great. And like Johnny Gargano versus Adam Cole, which now we know that that's what's happening, is going to be great. But Pete Dunne versus Walter is so intriguing because Pete Dunne's been champion for so long at this point, and I think Walter might be the guy to take it from him. And I kind of hope that Walter's the guy that takes it from him. And he's the only opponent in the whole NXT UK scene, or NXT, like any of the NXT UK, like ecosystems, right? He's the only guy that I think has the presence and the gravitas and the legitimacy to take the championship from Pete Dunne, because Pete Dunne's just on another level. Like, he's so far above everyone else. Like, it's hard to imagine a time when Pete Dunne wasn't the NXT UK champion, right? And I mean, he wasn't for a little while because Tyler Bate was, but people kind of forget that because Pete Dunne and that UK championship are just so synonymous with one another at this point. Walter taking it from him will feel like a very, very big deal. And I don't know if they're going to go that way. If they don't, then Pete Dunne's just going to have to vacate the championship the way Asuka did, right? Like, there's nobody else to face them. But I think that match is going to be killer, and I cannot wait.
It kind of says a lot about the NXT card that the reveal of the UK Championship match already supersedes everything else on the card.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that should be a great match. So anything else kind of non-WWE and that's been going on that you want to chat about, you want to tell us about?
Sure. I mean, I'm excited for the Beyond Wrestling weekly television show that's going to be starting Uncharted Territory. They've announced that they're starting WrestleMania week, and it's going to actually air live every Wednesday night. So I think this is like really, really cool. It's a risky move for Beyond to try and do a weekly television show, weekly live television show, but that roster is incredibly stacked. Like, they have some of the best performers in the world that work for them. And it's cool to see an independent company kind of coming up, right? And getting some more notoriety and getting some more buzz. And, you know, obviously I follow a lot of the Northeast wrestling scene, given that I'm a big Chikara fan, and there's a lot of cross-pollination between those rosters. So it's exciting for me as a fan of independent wrestling to see some of these companies kind of becoming more prominent and changing the game a little bit. Like, Beyond is one of the companies that started putting independent wrestling on YouTube prominently and like really kind of growing the scene that way. And now with a weekly television show, I think it could be really cool. Like, it could just be a really cool alternative for people who want to check out something different. And I think it's going to be streaming on independent wrestling TV. And they also just announced that they're going to be streaming on Fight as well. So I'm hoping that gets more eyes on them and that they can kind of continue to grow and whatnot. 'Cause, you know, some of the independent scene has been struggling a little bit, and I don't know. It's just another alternative that I don't know if I'm going to have time to watch it every week, but I do have access to an independent wrestling TV subscription, so I'm going to watch as much of it as I can. And I know they've announced like David Starr's involved, and I'm trying to think what
So
the
the
actual scope
first
is.
card for Uncharted Territory, their show, is Masato Tanaka against David Starr, SCU against
That's going to be so good.
Team Pazuzu, which is Santana, Ortiz, and Chris Dickinson, and then Orange Cassidy and someone against Jordan Grace and somebody. And what is a Beaver Boys Open Challenge? What is that?
I don't know.
Okay, but yeah, so there you go. More stuff to check out if you are looking for other stuff. I was going to ask you about this. Do you know more about this David Starr Israel ROH situation?
So I wasn't really aware of much of it, but did you watch his promo?
I've not had a chance to watch the promo. I know it was taken down. So what?
Yeah.
So what's the gist of the
Okay.
whole thing?
The gist of the whole thing, it's David Starr talking about how he's going to face Jay Lethal in Israel, and he basically slams Ring of Honor and slams Sinclair Broadcasting. Like, he says, "Oh, are you think you're doing me a favor by just hiring the Jew boy to go and face Jay Lethal in Israel?" Like, almost like he's being like the token or whatever. He's like, "No, I'm not facing Jay Lethal because I'm the Jewish guy and you want to have this like thing for Israel. I'm one of the best wrestlers in the whole fucking world," which he is. And so that's why he's challenging for the Ring of Honor Championship. But he also, I watched it last night. He also says some stuff like against Ring of Honor, saying you used to embody the spirit of independent wrestling, not be bought out by a right-wing corporate, like, I don't remember what he called Sinclair, but he alluded to the fact that Sinclair Broadcasting is a very far right company. And I mean, they own Ring of Honor now. So to call Ring of Honor an independent company at this point is just wrong, right? Like, they are owned by a big corporation. And so he kind of goes into that. And the promo is well worth watching. It gave me chills watching it. Like, it was the kind of thing where I don't love a lot of the work shoot stuff that WWE does, but this is one of those things that did feel real and made me interested in the match. Like, David Starr versus Jay Lethal. David Starr always makes me interested in anything he does. It's like that David Starr Jordan Devlin promo from Over the Top too, right? It was like fan fucking tastic. So yeah, it was just fascinating to hear him like call out Ring of Honor and call out Sinclair, and then he was asked to take the promo down by Ring of Honor because of, I think, pressure from Sinclair, and they didn't really like the way it painted them because he told the truth about Ring of Honor and about some of the backstage politics and stuff. The kind of thing Ring of Honor doesn't really want out in broad daylight. So it's fascinating.
Yeah, I was kind of like watching it take off by default, but like not seeing the promo and stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting because we talk a lot about how shoot stuff doesn't really work for you, but this is one that does. So it's interesting. And the Jordan Devlin Davis Starr video from OTT was amazing.
And that's just the kind of personality David Starr tends to bring to stuff. And so, like, he's becoming one of the performers that, like, I will check out more often. I've seen him live once. I saw him at Progress when they were in Detroit. And I mean, he's a fantastic wrestler and just such a charismatic personality too. Plus, I mean, I agree with a lot of his very leftist politics and that kind of thing, obviously. But I think he's a fantastic performer, and he makes me more interested in shows that he's on.
So WWE also announced after SmackDown that next week on SmackDown there's going to be a fatal four-way match to determine who Asuka will face on the kickoff show at WrestleMania, which is between Sonya Deville, Mandy Rose, Naomi, and Carmella. Any thoughts, Sandra?
I mean, this is just the definition of underwhelming, isn't it? Like Asuka, who we've talked about this in weeks past, and I feel like we're just going to keep having the same rant and banging our heads against the wall. But Asuka tapped out Becky Lynch clean at the Royal Rumble. Asuka was feeling like Asuka again. She was feeling like a killer again. She was feeling amazing. And then now she's not even on SmackDown half the time. And when she is on SmackDown, she just loses to Mandy Rose or is there to come up behind Mandy Rose and attack her. Like, this just feels so incredibly mid-card and so incredibly pre-show. Like, it does. I can't knock them putting this on the pre-show because it belongs on the pre-show if it belongs on the card at all. And it's such a bummer because Asuka's so great. Like, she's such an excellent performer, and they have other options. Like, they have other women in the company who could put on a killer WrestleMania match with Asuka, but they didn't find Asuka to be a priority, and they didn't think that having any sort of, build to her feud or match or whatever was worth their time. And that just, the whole thing kind of bums me out because I know that the Raw women's title is the one that they're focused on. But if you have two women's titles, which you should, like if you're going to have two men's titles, you should have two women's titles. You need to actually build that division, and you need to actually have credible contenders. And Mandy Rose has already faced Asuka. I don't want to see that again. It wasn't good the first time. Like, I didn't think their pay-per-view match was very good. And I mean, I would like it to be Sonya Deville, I guess, but we've already seen Asuka kill Sonya Deville too. So I don't know. It's such a letdown for me because I hate to keep hammering this home, but Nikki Cross is on your roster and she's just hanging out backstage watching things, wanting to play. Why won't you let her play? Why won't you let her do anything? Nikki Cross and Asuka have killed it before, and they could have, introduced a new character to the show, made her feel like a star, and given us a really, really good WrestleMania match. And instead, they're just kind of doing this. And they didn't even announce it on SmackDown. It's so unimportant to them that it wasn't even announced on SmackDown, the show. It was just announced on social media. And Asuka is way better of a performer, and your women's title should be more important to you than just a social media feud. And I am not very happy about it, Kenny. How do you feel?
I think it's embarrassing.
Yeah.
Like, I think that Mandy Rose, Naomi, Carmella, and Sonya Deville are an embarrassingly large number of steps down from Asuka. And, like, the way I would kind of mention it is, like, so remember when, like, Brock Lesnar was going to face Jinder for, like, the Survivor Series match?
Yeah.
The idea is when it's champion versus champion, you should believe that both champions are on the same level. And, like, Brock Lesnar could, wipe the floor with Jinder in 5 minutes, or not even 5 minutes. And the thing that bothers me about it is that, like, Ronda Rousey, like, she wouldn't even, it wouldn't even be competitive against any of those four. But Asuka is being put in a position where she has to have these, like, really, really pedestrian 5 minute matches with these women. And it's like, it's just so basic. It's so basic, and it's so dull, and it's so annoying. And it's like, everything that I've said about the SmackDown Women's Division in the last year and a half is just proven. by this. It's like, look, I saw a Nikki Cross thing today on Twitter where WWE put a thing about she was like looking at the WrestleMania sign, she wants to play, which I guess means she's in the Battle Royal, but like, I know that they like attractive women in the traditional sense, that they like hot blondes and all that kind of stuff, but like, nobody, I well, nobody that would pay good money cares about Sonya Deville versus Mandy Rose and the breakup angle. Nobody gives a shit. It will not sell a ticket. It will not get a network buy. Nobody cares at all. And,
I mean, I care,
but
but
you know what I mean. But like really, truly, like in terms of like a following of people caring, it
well, and
is.
that's the problem with this, though, right? Is that this Fatal 4-Way match is really being built up. If you watch the social media promos, it's being built up more about the dissension between Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville than about, going for the women's championship, which should be the point. Like, going for the women's championship should be the point. Contrast that to NXT this past week when we had the Fatal 5-Way, which I don't know if you've gotten a chance to watch NXT yet, but the Fatal 5-Way match with Matt Riddle, Velveteen Dream, Adam Cole, Ricochet and Aleister Black, right? So you have like these guys, and they all really want that NXT title. They want it so badly because the NXT title is vacated. And so Johnny Gargano's in the match because he was in the match before. And now all these guys are like fighting and scratching and clawing and doing everything they can in this match to get to that title. And I have a feeling that this Fatal 4-Way with the women is just going to be a bunch of Mandy and Sonya shenanigans, which, like, I don't really want them to break up. I'm interested in that story, but I don't think the payoff match is going to be great. And I would rather they stay a team and stay friends because I think they're better together.
The best
But
performance they've ever had was at Elimination Chamber when they were a team.
yeah, exactly. And I think that's how they can kind of best grow and change and not just be more faces in the SmackDown Women's Division. Like, I think Sonya actually is like coming a long way in ring, and I think she's great, but she's still kind of new at this. And I think that, her and Mandy together, they kind of balance each other out because Mandy's not as good in ring as Sonya, but Mandy has more of a character and personality than Sonya at this point. Not that Sonya's not capable of it, but that's just kind of the way they've been presented. And so them as a team, they kind of help each other out and become more interesting by like picking up each other's strengths and weaknesses. And then, I mean, if they're just alone, then I feel like it's just going to be more of the rotating women's division where everything feels mid-card. And that's a problem. Like, I don't want the SmackDown Women's Championship to feel mid-card. It should feel elevated to the point where it feels like the WWE Championship, because on that show, it's the equivalent title.
It's just so sad. And look, see whoever wins, it doesn't deserve to be in the main show. It doesn't
It doesn't.
at all.
Nope.
I also want to ask you
And you know
about
how much that pains me to say, but it
me
doesn't.
too. That's the how long have we been banging on about Asuka and our love of Asuka? So something else I wanted to ask you about. So obviously, the discussion Finn and I had the discussion on the Overrun last week. I don't know if you heard it, but 205 Live. And the idea of like, what can you do to make the show more relevant, and what can you do to make more people interested? And from an outsider, because like they've got you, right? They've got you as a viewer. You like it, you
Oh,
watch
they've
it,
got
blah
me
blah
as a
blah,
viewer,
right?
even though I'm angry at them, but yes, they have me.
So if you're not a viewer, Buddy Murphy versus Tony Nese is the match. Like, are they on
It
drugs?
is.
Are they on actual drugs? Like Buddy Murphy, I quite like him. I've seen him in a couple of the pay-per-views and stuff, and but like this match is like it's almost an advert to not watch, because like nobody is going to be at an arena or be on social media and go, Buddy Murphy versus Tony Nese, I better check out 205 Live. And it's just so sad because like I feel like this match is the most pre-show match of all the ones they've done so far. Because what the first one that they did was Neville and Austin Aries in Orlando.
Yes.
Then what was the one last year?
Cedric Alexander versus Mustafa Ali.
Okay. Now those felt bigger than this does as an
Those
outsider.
did feel bigger. Yes.
What are they
As
thinking?
a viewer of the show, it felt bigger. The weird thing is, like, and I didn't get to talk about 205 Live last week with the episode that broke my heart. So allow me to regale you with all of my anger. I don't know what they're thinking here. It's kind of baffling. And the thing is, there's an internal consistency to the story that they're telling with Tony Nese. It's similar to the Baron Corbin Kurt Angle situation for me, actually, because if you look at Tony Nese's arc on 205 Live right now, his whole thing in the tournament was that he was an underdog, right? And you know, he used to be partnered with Drew Gulak, and Drew Gulak turned on him, and Drew Gulak has always beaten him, right? So Drew Gulak cut promos before his match with Tony Nese in the tournament saying, "I have always beaten you. This will happen again." Like, he actually cut a really good promo in Philadelphia that was like, "I, you know, history tells us this," and he's like in front of a historical building and stuff. It was great. Because Drew Gulak is charismatic and great and should be in this match, but I digress. So then Tony Nese was cutting promos about like, "Yeah, I haven't been able to beat you, but I am stepping up my game and I'm working really hard and I'm trying to, you know, like better myself." Blah, 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 blah. I don't know what all he said, but stuff along those lines where he was like, "I need this. I need to get to the Cruiserweight Championship because this is my opportunity." And so he ends up beating Drew Gulak in the tournament, breaking my fucking heart because I wanted it to be Drew so badly. But I guess the story that they're telling with him is that he is the underdog and can't, like, he's working his way up from beneath, right? So then he faces Cedric Alexander. Everyone thought Cedric Alexander was going to win. I thought it might be Tony Nese because of this underdog story that they're telling, and it turned out to be Tony Nese because that's what they're doing, right? Like, Cedric Alexander has felt like the inevitability of 205 Live for so long. He's always in the title picture. He always gets put in the titles, and he was champion for an age, and it was so boring. And I did not want him anywhere near the title scene again. And I, like, if Cedric Alexander faced a Buddy Murphy at WrestleMania, I would be afraid that Cedric Alexander would win it back. And then I would be very upset because I do not want him to be champion again. So Tony Nese beating Cedric Alexander did feel like a big moment for Tony Nese if you're watching the show. And so him going up against Buddy Murphy, I don't know if they're going to give the Cruiserweight Championship to Tony Nese. I don't really want them to. I prefer Buddy Murphy as champion. But honestly, Buddy Murphy's barely been on the show either. So if you watch the show week to week, there is a story that they're telling with Tony Nese, but he's definitely not the most interesting performer. And to have the finals be Tony Nese versus Cedric Alexander last week was just such a letdown. Like, Oney Lorcan versus Cedric Alexander kind of broke my heart too, because it was just like Oney Lorcan kind of up and coming in the tournament, seemed like an interesting, fresh, new way to go. You know, he's an NXT guy, but came to 205 Live, and I love that cross-pollination. And Cedric Alexander just kind of squashed him. Like, Oney Lorcan hit his finisher on Cedric Alexander multiple times, and Cedric Alexander kicked out. And it just, the whole thing just bummed me out because it made Oney Lorcan look like a dork. And Oney Lorcan's not a dork, he's amazing. So yeah, I guess all of this is kind of like long-winded venting session for me to say I don't understand what 205 Live is doing. I don't know why they are going with some of their least charismatic performers for the biggest show of the year. Like, obviously I wanted it to be Drew, but I would have been cool with it being Oney Lorcan. I would have been cool with it being Akira Tozawa too. It's not like, it's not just because Drew Gulak isn't in this match that I'm upset. It's I feel like they're choosing more mid-card players to be in their title scene, and I'm just kind of baffled by it.
I mean, again, because I'm not a viewer of it, like, I don't want to bash it too much, but it's just like they're not even giving India a reason to watch. Like, and at this point, I'm just like, so, you know, like when we were in New York, like my last night there is the Tuesday night, and there's just no way that I would spend an extra hour in that arena to watch that. I would go an hour early to watch it, because I feel like it'd be like a good starter, right, to the main course of the SmackDown. But to watch it afterwards, it just feels like a. I just don't, I'm baffled at how they do it. It just makes no sense. Tony Nese and Cedric Alexander. I said to Finn earlier on, and I stand by it. The choice of them in this match is like asking if you want to be drowned or burned to death.
Tony Nese versus Buddy Murphy, you mean?
No, Tony Nese and Cedric Alexander being the two options that he would
Oh,
face.
in the final. It's not a good choice. And I mean, the 205 Live roster right now is not very big. That's something a lot of people don't really talk about, but a lot of the people have faced each other and it's just kind of stagnant a little bit. Like, there are some really interesting things going on, like with Drew Gulak trying to recruit Humberto Carrillo, and I don't know, like there have been a lot of fun things going on the show, but none of it's around the title scene. And I don't understand making them. They're trying. Like, they're trying with the Tony Nese story. I get it, but if you don't watch the TV week to week, which a lot of people don't, then they're not really going to understand why Tony Nese is here and fighting and whatnot.
I've seen a
And
few people kind of say, like, you know, Tony Nese, I knew he could make it and all that kind of stuff. And I think a lot of it has got to do with, and I don't mean this in a snobby way at all. I feel like there's a lot of people, there's like, so you're an example of somebody who you're a wrestling fan, WWE and non, right? You like a lot of different stuff. You like a lot of different areas of wrestling. There's a lot of people who are just independent wrestling fans, and that is it. They don't want to watch WWE. There's a lot of people who are WWE fans who do not watch independent wrestling. And I feel like Tony Nese is a very independent wrestler kind of talent, where
He
like
is very much so.
he would be great. I mean, I said this. I'm just regurgitating all my fan chat here, but like, I feel like Buddy Murphy and Tony Nese would be great on an Evolve card. Great. It's not a WrestleMania match at all, and it's a shame because Buddy Murphy. I feel like every time I see him on a pay-per-view, like when I saw him at the Royal Rumble against Akira Tozawa, I think it was. He's really trying, and he deserves better. Like I feel bad for him because like, there's nothing he can do. Like he can go out there and kill himself to try and make it good, but it's still nobody's gonna care. In terms of,
Well,
I'm not saying nobody.
I don't know if people aren't going to care. I think that once people are like once the match starts and once it starts going, Tony Nese has been in these matches before too where like he will get people on his side because he is very good at
Oh no,
wrestling. Like he doesn't.
when they're in there, they will get people into the match. But what I mean is, like, it's not gonna, like, shouldn't the aim of 205 Live and these title matches be that at the end of it you go, I want to watch 205 Live now? And I feel like
Yeah, it should be. And
that's.
they're fighting an uphill battle because of when they tape 205 Live after SmackDown is the worst choice. Like when they were taping it before SmackDown for those few weeks that they did that, the crowd was more alive for it and they were more into it. And I will say, I mean, like the Cedric Alexander Tony Nese match was actually very good and it got the crowd into it by the end. And that's kind of one of the things that 205 Live keeps doing, right? Like a lot of these performers are so talented in ring and they are putting on killer matches. So by the end of the matches, even the crowd that seems super uninvested and they don't really want to be there, but they just haven't left because they don't want to stand up or whatever, like people get into the matches by the end, but it's such a disservice to, I think, a lot of the performers on the shows that they're put in the position where they have to fight that uphill battle instead of being highlighted and instead of being presented as something to watch. You know, like they 205 Live is the underdog show, and I think that's why it's kind of become my, you know, my pet project. Like whereas NXT used to be the show that I was like, no, it's really good, I promise. Like 205 Live is kind of that for me now, but a lot of the things 205 Live has been doing do feel a little bit more stagnant lately. Like I mean, there's an interesting story going on with Mike Kanellis and his like losing streak kind of, and Mike Kanellis just beat Akira Tozawa this week, and it's I don't know. It's weird. I don't think 205 Live quite knows what it wants to be or what it wants to do right now. And I think it's a disservice to the performers and it's a disservice to the show.
Well, I think also it's like, do you bring in guys like Ricochet and Johnny Gargano to elevate it, or Finn Balor, or do those guys just become lower by being on it? That's the problem.
Yeah,
Like,
I mean,
what's.
like if they brought more cruiserweights onto Raw every once in a while to have killer matches or whatever. And we've seen that it can work, right? Like when Mustafa Ali debuted on SmackDown and was treated like a big deal, and now he's kind of hovering around the title scene, we've seen that these guys can fit into main event scenarios and not feel like they're lesser, right? But unfortunately, that's not the way it's presented. And I mean, saying that that Tony Nese is more of like an independent wrestling type performer, he is. And maybe that's what I like about him because I think that, you know, some of his stuff on social media has been more interesting than anything he's put on 205 Live. Like the 205 Life video from a few weeks ago where I think it was Drew Gulak was in it and Tony Nese was in it and Kalisto was in it, but I kind of ignored him and Brian Kendrick was in it. And they asked them about like their dream WrestleMania opponents and stuff. And, you know, Drew Gulak is like, I would wrestle my brother Rory at WrestleMania. And Brian Kendrick was like, I would wrestle the American Dragon Daniel Bryan. And Tony Nese is like, I would want Arnold Schwarzenegger and Hulk Hogan and like just ridiculous stuff. And they're all talking about like their entrances. And Drew Gulak, of course, is very no nonsense. Like, I would like music. I would like entrance music, but no shenanigans, of course, because he's Drew. And I forget what Brian Kendrick said, but Tony Nese was like, I would like pyro. I would like many spotlights on me, and then every time I point to an ab, pyro goes off. So now at WrestleMania, I'm just going to be disappointed when we don't get like tons of pyro and spotlights for Tony Nese's abs because that's, you know, really the only benefit to him winning this match.
So I very quickly, I forgot to tell this story and I thought it'd be quite funny to just tell it on the podcast. I don't think I've told it. So on the last night of the Goldust show, we were in London and Steve Gunn came along Have I told you this?
No, I've barely talked to you since the Goldust tour.
So Steve Gunn came along, and what I didn't tell Steve Gunn was that I'd told Dustin who he was.
Oh.
So Steve walks up, and Dustin just puts his hand out and holds him back, and then grabs me really close to him and does like a sexual pose together. So Steve has no idea what to do. And then they take a photo, and it's very funny, and it's very good. And then anyway, we're downstairs, and there's a whole joke about Dustin was flying Delta, so he was talking about Delta being his dick. And then I was talking about my Delta, and then Steve walked past, and I just shouted, "Steve, tell him how good my Delta is." And Steve had no idea what to do, and all he could think to say was, "Yeah, it's good." And then Dustin was like, "No, come on, Steve, tell me about it. Describe it to me." And Steve just said, "It's like a lava lamp."
Lava lamp.
And then he was like, "I just wanted to say something complimentary," but then where it comes in later is that we're upstairs and Dustin again, because Dustin tries to fuck with you at every opportunity, and Dustin ended up saying later on, "Hey Steve, like what did you mean by the fact his dick's a lava lamp?" And without even missing a beat, Steve just said, "Well, not seen since the 90s."
Oh, go Steve Gunn. Points for that.
So, that was fun. We I tonight I think later tonight, hopefully I'm signing a contract on a new talent. So that should be good. Something for July.
That is
So
exciting.
that should be good. What else is there?
Kofi Kingston on SmackDown?
Well, we're good. So let's first of all on Raw, I thought Ronda Rousey was fucking great, absolutely great. And I want to get your take on this because again, I spoke to this with Finn, but I want to get your take on it because you two are so different in terms of how you look at wrestling, so it should be interesting. What kind of fascinates me about Ronda is that, like, so you know how a lot of people are very frustrated. A lot of people don't like Ronda Rousey, or they don't like her as a person, or they don't like her in wrestling. And what kind of appeal? What appealed to me recently is kind of, I feel like she actually gets it more than most other people do because she's not trying to be a cool heel, and she's actually getting a lot of fans to, instead of being like, "Well done, you're a good heel," people are like, "I fucking hate her, like she is a dick." And I almost feel like, isn't that what she should be doing now? And if she, I mean, the way she's going about it is not by she's not. Her opponents are not ending up being belittled. They kind of like whoever she's in the ring with, for the most part, she enhances. She made Sasha Banks feel like a star. She made Ruby Riott feel the best she ever has in their two Raw matches. Take away the Elimination Chamber one, and like Becky and Charlotte feel big by being in a match with her. So, is there something to her style of being a heel? It's kind of similar to Brock Lesnar in some ways, of like. They just want you to dislike them. They want you to want them to get beat. They want you to want somebody to take the belt off them. Is there something to that, or do you think that that kind of heat is not good for wrestling? Like, what do you think? Because I'm curious.
For me, it works. Honestly, because I don't like Ronda Rousey as a human very much, and everything she's doing on Raw right now and doing on social media. I mean, she's weird on social media. She's super weird when she tries to call out Becky, and it's just like, Ronda, put your phone down, hon. But if like everything that she's doing, and I did watch the clips of her and Travis Brown and like beating up security and just like being pissed off and storming out, that feels authentic. Because if you watch Ronda Rousey in her UFC career, she kind of flew off the handle at people, right? Like not shaking Miesha Tate's hand, or like, just being kind of a dick to people about a lot of stuff. Like this feels like the Ronda Rousey that I was expecting. Like smiley baby face Ronda Rousey was cool because it was like, okay, she's getting to live her dream and be a wrestler and she's really good at it. But this feels like authentic person Ronda Rousey to me. And I think her using that and her being willing to lean into that and being willing to be booed and being willing to just be a dick to everyone and not care and not giving a damn about her reputation, as her song says, I find it compelling and I find it intriguing. I understand why some people don't like it, and I understand why some people don't like her, calling out things like Becky Lynch's armbar looking fake, or, like sort of breaking the fourth wall, but it's almost a new kind of kayfabe, right? Because we know that wrestling is scripted. We know that it is. And like a lot of the work shoot stuff that WWE tries to do doesn't work for me because it just feels like it's inserted for no reason. This feels like it's actually a blend of real life and not real life, and it's not highlighting the fact that any certain thing is fake or whatever. I don't know. There's just a fine balance to be struck. It's like the David Starr promo we were talking about, how that works for me, because I think it feels real, it feels authentic, and it makes me want to see that match. And everything Ronda Rousey's doing, it does kind of make me want to see either Becky or Charlotte win, right? Becky specifically, obviously Becky,
But then
not Charlotte,
do you think
Becky.
it's like, because what I'm kind of fascinated by is that, you hear a lot of wrestling fans say, I want to be invested again. I want to feel like I love somebody and I hate somebody. But then it feels like when somebody does something to be hated, they're like, oh, I don't like that. I don't want that to be what it is. So I feel like it's very difficult today to be a heel, because how do you really be a heel? Because most people, we're guilty of it. We do podcasts and we go, she was a great heel there. He was a great heel there. Like, that's how a lot of people talk in some ways now. So I feel like Ronda's doing something fresh with it. And like, for her to be doing that a year in is pretty impressive, I think. Like, because it kind of annoys me that she uses the kayfabe word, but it annoys me, I think, in the right way. Where like, I feel like she's kind of like the fact that she kind of disrespects wrestling on the surface, and then she's selling t-shirts because she just wants to make money from it. All that kind of stuff. Where she's going, I don't need this company. I can go away tomorrow and just leave it. Like, all the stuff she's saying, I kind of believe half of it, like that she thinks that. And I think that's why it works for me more. But
Well, because it seems true to Ronda Rousey, the person, right? Like a lot of it seems true to Ronda Rousey, the person. And a lot of the stuff she does annoys me. And I think like it's helpful that I don't follow her on Twitter. So I only really see like Becky Lynch's comebacks to her. Because I, like I said, I'm not really a big fan of Ronda Rousey, the person, but I think she's a compelling character. And I think that she brings it in big match situations. I mean, she looks like a badass. Like, watching Ronda Rousey just sort of dismantle Dana Brooke on Raw was exactly what it was going to be. You know, like obviously Dana Brooke getting a title shot against Ronda Rousey was not going to go super well for Dana Brooke. And I want to defend Dana's promo from last week a little bit. Like, people
oh
were
my
super harsh.
God, Jesus Christ.
Her delivery is not the greatest, but I
I would
don't
like
think
to tell you, Rhonda, that I am here to. What?
she had a lot of passion behind what she was saying, though, and I don't think her delivery was all that much worse than Charlotte's a lot of the time. I really don't. Like, I think that there are so many times that Charlotte comes off like just a robot and she gets away with it because she's Charlotte. And I think like Dana Brooke saying like, I have nothing left to lose, that was compelling to me. I liked that. Obviously, she was gonna get her arm ripped off, but
My issue
you
is
know,
more.
like Dana Brooke saying like,
Sorry, on you go.
no, what were you gonna say?
What? So my issue with it, I think the delivery was bad. I think the Charlotte thing, I think, works for me because she's being a character. Like Dana's felt more like this is me being from the heart, and I don't feel like anyone who's from the heart speaks like that. My issue more with it was, and I want to be very careful how I word this because I did mention it before. I'm not keen about when people bring their own issues into it, because it kind of feels sometimes like they're trying to say, you need to like this more because I have stuff going on. And like, I mean, look, she's gone through a lot of shit, like, and I really feel for her. And I mean, I think it was remember the Rumble, the Women's Evolution 24 special last year, when she had like a bit of like her boyfriend's bodybuilding gear in her Rumble outfit, and she
Yeah,
said
which was cool.
that was the best, that was great, and I really love that she was able to do that. But at the same time, I can't lie about how her promo came across to me and how it just felt like, that was, you get a moment sometimes where it's like, here's a chance for you to really show people. And I just feel like I feel like she dropped it. Now, maybe that's just me. Maybe I'm, but I've seen a lot of people feeling the same way about it. Maybe that was her passion, but it's a different thing. But like, Lana always bangs on about, this is my journey, and like, it's like, yeah, but you're rubbish though. That's the problem.
Yeah, well,
Like,
I kind of like the story that Dana was telling though, because I mean it felt kind of authentic and real. Like I've been here, like I'm here, I'm trying to work, I'm trying to, you know, get on TV. I can't even get on TV right now, and now, like, I mean, I have nothing left to lose, so I'm gonna challenge you, even though I know this is probably suicide, and it was. I like the fact that Dana was like, you know what, fuck it. Like, I want to get on TV. I want this to be my opportunity. Now, it didn't go well for her, and she's, you know, she's not a great wrestler. Like, she's not. But I kind of like the story that they were telling with Dana, and I mean, it also made Ronda just look like a badass and a killer because she, you know, not letting go of the arm bar and just being an absolute dick. Like, there's no reason she has to hold on to the arm bar and like look like she's gonna try to break Dana Brooke's arm. Like, that's just a dick move. If someone taps out, you let go because that's how this is supposed to work, right? So yeah, and then I don't know, what do you think about them bringing Travis Brown into it? Because he felt kind of like just inserted into the whole thing for me. I don't really understand the purpose of him being there.
I saw a th I mean, it's not going to happen, but I did love it. Somebody was like, what if they do at WrestleMania, Travis in Ronda's corner, Flair in Charlotte's corner, and Connor in Ronda's, in Becky's corner? And I was
No.
like, I mean, the thing about that was, first of all, I think the three of them are I think the three of them can main event on their own. But also, like, I feel like Connor and Travis is much more of a backup thing than Ric Flair, like, who
Yeah.
is barely hanging on. You know, like, so,
I mean, he's still recovering from being beaten up by Batista.
exactly. I mean, when I saw Travis Brown, I kind of thought, I mean, it's interesting. Do you think that maybe there's a part of him being a character coming up? Like, could that be something they do? I mean, I do quite like the idea of, like, this.
It seems like it because they were really hammering home like Travis is the only one who can stop Ronda Rousey right now because like he grabs her over the guardrail, right? And like puts the guardrail between the security guards and Ronda's just like looking angry and they just sort of like storm off or whatever.
It's kind of nice to see, like, the husband playing what is usually the wife role. Like, you know, like usually you see the woman kind of trying to hold back the guy. It's nice to see the guy trying to hold back the woman. It's a nice, like, play on the usual way that you see that play out.
And it's nice to see like a husband being supportive. I just don't want him to be like central to it, I guess is my fear. But I mean, Ronda's a bigger star than Travis Brown is, so it wouldn't really make that much sense for them to like bring him in trying to get more views.
Yeah, no, I'm open to him being involved. I quite like. I mean,
I just don't want him involved at Mania.
I wouldn't mind. I mean, I wouldn't mind him doing something where, like, Becky knocks him off the apron or something like that. Like, that would be fine. But you just don't want it turning into, like, what I'm trying to, you don't want it turning into, like, WrestleMania 2000 with a McMahon in every corner.
I just don't want men involved in the first women's WrestleMania main event.
No, I mean, yeah, I don't mind if he's there in the front row because he's her husband and he's been there most of the
Front
time,
row's
which
fine. Front row's fine. And if he like talks shit to Becky and she gets to punch him or something, then
Like, but I mean, with Brock and Brock and Ronda and Shayna, like, I think MMA fighters seem to work quite well for me. So if Travis wants to get involved, like, in wrestling, fair enough.
Yeah.
Also, shout out to Drew on Raw for his promo work. I thought he was great. Really liked him
He did
coming
have an excellent promo.
out. So somebody tweeted me, went, "Oh, isn't it rubbish that Drew's getting buried by Roman at WrestleMania?" And I'm like, he's in one of the top five matches in the show. With Roman Reigns. Like, I can guarantee you, like, of all the things that we all probably thought he was going to do, this is, like, bigger.
Facing Roman Reigns at WrestleMania does not exactly feel like a burial. Like,
No, I'm not at
that
all.
feels like a pretty big deal. And I thought Drew did well. I think that sometimes on Raw he's come across as quite bland. And I mean, I know like he's a friend of yours and stuff, but I think that he hasn't been done a lot of favors by storytelling recently on Raw. And I think he felt a lot more interesting this past week.
So I guess we should talk about the big story of the week, which is the Kofi Kingston storyline on Tuesday, where we had him running the gauntlet. He beat Cesaro, Sheamus, Samoa Joe, Randy Orton, and Rowan. I don't think it was in that order, but that was the five. And
Eric
then,
Rowan, who came out to the Bludgeon Brothers theme and not sparkly banjo music for some reason, and I do not understand why. I am upset.
So they have this gauntlet match, and then in the end, so we'll talk about the gauntlet match first before we talk about what happens afterwards. I think this is an unpopular opinion. I was kind of bored. Like,
Were you?
yeah, because, like, we had the Seth Rollins gauntlet match last year. I'm sure we had another gauntlet match on Raw, and then we had, did Brian not do a gauntlet at one point last year? And
Well, I mean,
then
we just had a Kofi one.
we just had a Kofi one. So, like, I feel like it's just, like, I've seen enough of them. And I feel like there was moments that I really like. I love the callback with Orton calling him stupid, that callback to their thing before. I thought that some, I mean, like Sheamus and Kofi just almost sent me to sleep. Like it was just like
Really, I liked Sheamus and Kofi a lot.
I liked Sheamus, I liked Cesaro and Kofi, but
See, it's weird because like I guess I just had the opposite reaction because when I was watching it, I thought, wow, Sheamus versus Kofi Kingston. Like 3 years ago, that match is something that I would have been like, no, do not show me this match. I do not want to see it. Like, so boring, right? Like two characters that I just am not invested in. And for me, I kind of like hard-hitting Sheamus. Like, I'm a big fan of him, and I think that they actually work together really well. And it was just interesting to me how like character reinvention and context meant something because this match had a lot more stakes to it than your normal like just Kofi Kingston versus Sheamus 5 years ago. So I don't know. I kind of liked it. Cesaro versus Kofi Kingston was great too. I don't know. I enjoyed the gauntlet. I don't think I enjoyed it quite as much as I did the previous one. I think maybe part of what harmed it was that the outcome seemed inevitable, right? Because everyone's behind Kofi. Everyone wants Kofi to go to WrestleMania. And it's weird to me because I think I'm almost more like artificially interested in the steps like leading to Kofi going to WrestleMania than I am actually interested in watching it play out, partially because the feud just keeps being harmed and overshadowed by a certain old man who just needs to go away and off my television. But yeah, it's weird how they've sort of manufactured this in not very long, right? Like this has only been happening since Elimination Chamber was like the start of Kofi Kingston. So
when was the other gauntlet match? Was it 2 weeks ago? Three?
it was right before, was it right after Elimination Chamber or right before? It was right before Elimination Chamber.
Yeah,
It
because
was
he
the week
beat Brian
before.
because it was whoever got in. Yeah, something like that.
Because it was whoever won the gauntlet match was going to be last to enter the chamber, and Randy Orton won it by doing the RKO to AJ Styles, right? After AJ Styles beat Kofi Kingston. So,
Yes.
yeah.
So, okay, so let's
And
get
I
to
think
the.
part, like, the gauntlet was, I thought the wrestling was really good, but, like, the fact that it was all set up as, like, Vince McMahon's whim did kind of harm it for me a little. I was just trying to, enjoy it as I went along and not think about Vince McMahon. And I was at this point in the show thinking how nice it was that Vince McMahon was not on the show and ruining everything.
So I have a different opinion to you on that, but you go first. What t tell me about the outcome at the end with Vince coming out, bringing out Brian, and stacking the deck against Kofi.
So the weird thing is, I'm pretty sure last week Daniel Bryan was announced for the gauntlet. I think he was. And so it was weird to me that he wasn't in it. And like when Kofi Kingston beat Randy Orton, it was awesome, right? Like I think that was the last match, was Kofi versus Randy. And so it was this big triumphant moment, and it's great. And it's like, yes, he's going to WrestleMania. This is exactly what we wanted. We're finally on track. This is great. And then of course, Vince McMahon has to come out and be Vince McMahon all over the show and say, "You're going to WrestleMania if you can beat this man." And it's the same thing of like just taking the stakes that you've presented to me in a show and then just undercutting them and changing the rules and just kind of shitting on everything that I just watched for the last hour. Like it just makes the last hour feel meaningless to me, and it makes me not trust anything on the show. Like if Vince McMahon can just come out and change the rules, then it's really hard for me to get invested in anything that's going on. And it's the same thing that we talk about a lot on Retro Raw. And like I'm not gonna give any spoilers, but like I'm having the same issue with the show The Blacklist right now. Because there have been certain like people who aren't who they say they are, or like people who are dead and then not dead, and then like something's changing, but oh, like at the last minute, something happened, and all this stuff. And it's getting to the point where I'm like, well, I don't believe anyone is who they say they are, or I don't believe that there are any stakes, and I don't believe that there's any sort of permanence to anything. And it's making me less invested in that show, which is a non-wrestling example. And so it's just like for me personally as a fan, like I like when there are rules, I like when there is logic, I like twists and turns in storytelling, but this just feels so artificially convoluted to me that it's making me less interested in the journey. Like I'm still excited for Kofi Kingston to go to WrestleMania and face Daniel Bryan, which I assume is the outcome that we're going to get here, but for me, I want a story to be compelling and to be interesting for every step of the journey, and this just makes me want to skip to the end.
Which is interesting because for me it's the complete opposite. Like I said about a month ago, I was like, oh, you know, the Kofi Kingston thing kind of feels like a nostalgia run, and I think this has been excellent. I think there's a lot of elements to it. I wanted to bring up some tweets that Karan had. Is it pronounced Karan or is it Kern?
Karan.
Karan. Okay, cool. So Karan had made a couple of points on his tweets that I thought were kind of how I feel, but articulated better than I could. And he said, he was talking about, the running knee that guaranteed Daniel Bryan a spot in his title match, the move that made everyone chant yes, was now the move that took away Kofi's chance, the move that deflated the crowd. This is one of the most carefully crafted inverse stories in wrestling. I loved it because it's very full circle. Like, underdog Daniel Bryan is now the big bad evil that crushed Kofi's dreams. Also, I'm pretty sure last week Vince had said that Bryan was part of the gauntlet, so you've surprised me. But I think for me, what's working is that every week when something happens to Kofi, I want him to win more. I want him to overcome it. And the Vince McMahon thing feels organic because. So Mel had also wrote a tweet today, Mel Rennett on Twitter, about saying, that anyone who says that this is not racial is dumb. And I think that's a bit of a harsh language to use on it, but I think that what's happened in the last kind of 24 hours is there have been little subtext elements of race that have been put into it. Like, I think Byron Saxton said on SmackDown something like, they just don't want somebody like Kofi to succeed or something like that, which was obviously
Well, and
veiled.
there's been a lot of that kind of language. Like in Kofi Kingston's promos to Vince McMahon, he's like, someone like me you didn't think could succeed. And Biggie Langston actually put out a tweet where he's talking about it. He's like, because now they're kind of teasing on social media, like the New Day considering quitting WWE because they're like, what more can we do? Like at this point, we've proven everything. And I think that's part of like Scott Hawks and I were talking about on Twitter. And it's one of those things like, what more can Kofi do to prove himself? Like he's done everything. So at this point, everything just feels kind of watered down. Like him winning the gauntlet and going to WrestleMania, I think would have been kind of the pinnacle for me. And now it's like anything else that he does just feels watered down and it feels like it's just prolonging something. So I mean, we just come at it different ways
I mean, but
and
what's
we're
funny,
just
you were talking about how, like, you want to be invested every step of the way, and it's like, I feel like had they given Kofi his title shot 2 weeks ago, we've just got 3 weeks of Kofi being the contender. Whereas I feel like now there's actually, like, there's stakes to it and stuff. And I think the racial subtext that is there, from Big E as well, saying people, they don't want people like us or whatever, I think that that's good if Kofi is going to overcome in the end. He has to win. That's kind of how it is now, because there's the famous angle with Booker T and Triple H in 2003 when Triple H said, people like you. And then Triple H won, which was a real issue. But I think the
Yeah,
story's been
and
put.
Kofi has to win at WrestleMania. Like he has to, right? And it's weird because like I love Daniel Bryan and I love him as champion, so I don't necessarily want him to lose, but the story has to be that Kofi Kingston wins at WrestleMania at this point, right? Because otherwise, yeah, all of this stuff that they're saying and like this has absolutely become a racial thing. Like it 100% has because you can't say people like you.
I don't think that the whole thing is racial. I think there's racial subtext to the story.
Yeah, there's racial subtext to the story because you can't look at Kofi Kingston and say, people like you, we didn't think would succeed or whatever. What does that mean if it's not a racial thing? You can't say like smaller guys or like flippy guys or whatever because, Rey Mysterio's been WWE champion and Daniel Bryan's been WWE champion and all that kind of stuff. Like the difference is Kofi Kingston is a black man who is. They can't say like, oh, tag team people can't, be WWE champion. Like all sorts of people have come out of tag teams and become WWE champion. So that's really the only thing left when they're saying people like you. And
And I
it
think.
adds an interesting element to the story, but it's just, I don't know. For me, the problem is Vince McMahon. Like Vince McMahon being the one to just like subvert everything. This would be so much more interesting to me if Vince would stay in the background and not come out and just like change all the rules.
How would you continuously put stumbling blocks in front of Kofi without it being Vince? Because Brian can't do that because he's not got that level of. Because to me, what it seems like is happening. I mean, I also love the element of Daniel Bryan now being Vince McMahon's puppet.
That
Like,
is very interesting.
he is now the complete opposite of what he used to be. Like, he was. And I think that's really fascinating. And I think that the idea, like, when Kofi Kingston won on SmackDown, in my head I was going, oh, this is really good. But when Vince came out, I was like, oh, yes, there's going to be another twist to it, because I'm excited about where it's going, because I almost trust that it's, like, it is going somewhere of, like. I don't know if you saw this. Tom Phillips did an interview on Busted Open Radio today, and he said that if Kofi Kingston staged a walkout, he would go with him. because he
Oh, that's
because he
interesting.
and I feel like if it's building to that, like, can you imagine the whole SmackDown roster walking out on Vince McMahon because he is, fucking this guy over? Like, I know it's very similar to the Occupy movement, but I don't really mind that. I want I so I was I messaged Mel back today on Twitter because I was like, I'm very aware that the two of us, two white people, talking about a racial thing with African Americans can sometimes seem a bit weird because. So I wanted to get her take, and I said, I'm curious if Kofi wins, are you happy with the story? Just what do you think as an African American? So she said, I actually think they're telling the story correctly, the only outcome being Kofi winning. As of this moment, I have divorced my feelings about Vince's racism from the story because I believe that right now we're supposed to see it, whereas before it came out by accident. Now, if he doesn't win, that's a whole different story, but I'm choosing to see the genuine storytelling they're doing. My tweet was referencing people who are ignoring the racism because things like that make them uncomfortable. Hang on. It's all of it. That's why it's actually so good. It's multifaceted, but people are divorcing a relevant part of the story because they don't like it. I bet you if you asked the New Day, they'd say it's an equally important part of the story as the under guy part. Which is kind of fascinating about, that for her, that story, that it's a very dangerous story to tell in
It is
wrestling.
a dangerous story to tell, and it's not a story that WWE tends to handle with sensitivity. And that's something that, like, again, if Kofi wins, if Kofi beats Daniel Bryan, them telling that story, and like for Kofi Kingston to be, like, I mean, he's not going to be the first WWE champion who's black because The Rock is black, but like, people are going to see him as that, which is a whole nother situation.
Well, he would be the first purely black WWE champion because The Rock's half black, half Samoan, and that's always been like a weird thing where like people don't count The Rock in that conversation for whatever reason. He actually tweeted out, I don't know if you saw it yesterday or something, where somebody had asked him what he considers himself, and
Oh no, I didn't see that.
he said that he considers himself like half black, half Samoan. He's proud of both,
Yeah.
he doesn't see himself, but whenever I've seen people before having the arguments on social media where you say, oh, there's never been a black WWE champion, specifically WWE champion, and The Rock's name comes up and people say, no, he's not black. So I feel like with Kofi is the difference between that as well is The Rock was a huge, huge star. With Kofi, this is like feels like it's his last chance. And I think the beauty of the story for me and the reason that it's working for me is because here we are 2 weeks before WrestleMania, and Kofi feels like the guy for me to face Daniel Bryan, and I didn't feel that about him 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, he definitely feels like the guy. It's just for me, it's such a bummer because I love so many of the elements that you're talking about. I love the idea of shit heel Daniel Bryan kind of becoming everything he loathed, right? Like now that he is on top, he's like joining the authority, which is so antithetical to like the entire ethos of Daniel Bryan, right? Like he was our guy. He was the Occupy Raw guy. And I think the parallels between Daniel Bryan and Kofi Kingston didn't work for me at first because I felt like they were trying to force Daniel Bryan's narrative onto Kofi Kingston. But I think that they are kind of differentiating them now, and having Daniel Bryan and like be in the role that he's in has made it more interesting. Like, I guess for me, I just prefer the story to be Daniel Bryan versus Kofi Kingston. And so when that's the thing, when that's, the main conflict, then I'm more interested because I always want wrestling conflicts to be between two wrestlers. And so Vince McMahon inserting himself in the story and becoming central to it and becoming kind of an overshadowing force is just something that doesn't personally work for me. But I love a lot of the other elements of the story. I think they've done an amazing job of making Kofi Kingston into an incredible, legit player. I think he feels like the guy to face Daniel Bryan. I don't think there's another option at this point. And I think that it feels like a WrestleMania-worthy match. It really does. It's just a lot of the constant like shenanigans and subversion and just changing the rules is always going to be a sticking point for me. It just is.
I feel like what they've done this year, even though a lot of the stuff is last minute, there is a lot of long term story going into WrestleMania. The Shane McMahon Miz thing goes back to Crown Jewel in November. The Ronda Becky Charlotte thing kind of goes back to like SummerSlam, really, if you want to go back to the beginning of Becky and Charlotte. So the Seth and Brock stuff's been going on for a while. The Kofi Bryan thing, even though they've manufactured it kind of in like a month and a half, it feels like the story. I would be very surprised if at WrestleMania Seth Rollins, Becky Lynch, and Kofi Kingston all walk out with the titles. And I feel like the person who might not walk out is Seth Rollins.
Seth Rollins is the only one that I would be okay with not walking out with the title. Even though it would be very annoying because I do not want Brock Lesnar to still be champion. I would love if all three of them won. I really would. Like, can you imagine? People would love this WrestleMania.
Yeah, no, they would. They would. And
And I feel like WWE doesn't give fans happy moments very often, right? Like they tend to withhold and withhold and build heat and make us upset and miserable about everything so often. I mean, the last time we got a really truly happy, wonderful moment, I mean, you could say Becky Lynch winning the Royal Rumble maybe, but like a big WrestleMania happy ending to WrestleMania was Daniel Bryan. And that's been years. So it would be really nice if we got to just have another WrestleMania where nice things happen and we can all leave and feel good about life. That's what I want from WrestleMania. That's what WrestleMania should be. Like, wrestling doesn't always have to give you what you want, but sometimes it should, because if it withholds everything for so long and then there's no good payoff to it, then it's just an exercise in frustration.
Well, WrestleMania used to give you, I mean, if you know, WrestleMania 3, Hogan beats Andre. WrestleMania 6, Warrior beats Hogan. WrestleMania 10, Bret wins the world title in Madison Square Garden. WrestleMania 12, Shawn wins the belt. WrestleMania 14, Austin wins the belt. WrestleMania 30, like, there's a lot of WrestleManias where you get those moments. And it feels like the last few years we have been stuck in the Roman Reigns experiment. And this is the first year that we've not been stuck in it. For since 2014, because in 2015, 16, 17, and 18, he was in those main events. So this is kind of the first year we might get a chance to see it. So
And I really hope we get it. I really, really hope we get it. So it's overall, I am enjoying the Kofi Kingston story. I just want Vince McMahon to go away. Is my summary.
what are the plugs you want to give as we head into the podcast sunset?
Okay, can we just like quick shout out to The Miz for an incredible promo on SmackDown? I am so looking forward to Miz versus Shane McMahon, even though I think it might kill Shane McMahon. The Miz is incredible and I really love him. But you can find me on Twitter at Sandra Ruth RW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside underscore the Ropes. Check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes for tons of bonus content. YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes for tons of interview content. New stuff with Chris Jericho, I believe, just went up on there, along with other videos. And I believe that is all for now.
So yeah, hope you have a good weekend, everybody. We're back to normal schedule. We have another Retro Raw coming out in the next day or two, and then we will probably have the one that's supposed to come out on Sunday be Monday. This is probability.
We will catch up soon.
Soon, soon,
It's
soon we'll catch
happening.
up.
Oh, and the Iconics beat Sasha and Bayley, which was weird. Sasha and Bayley showed up on SmackDown. I'm trying to remember all what happened this week. That was exciting.
Yes, I guess the Iconics will probably be in the women's tag four-way. Cool. I hope Beth Phoenix murders them. So yeah, whose plane is out?
I think we should play. Let's just play the New Day's theme.
Here is the theme that we will hopefully be hearing at WrestleMania with jubilant celebrations. Or do you know, I worked out today. Do you know how long we're going to be in the stadium for, Sandra?
11 hours.
So the kickoff show starts at 5. Now we'll probably be there for about 4-ish, half 4. So we'll be there from half 4 and the show will probably finish about 12:30.
It's going to be a long day.
Okay, thanks for listening, everybody. Here's the new day. Bye.
Bye.
It's a new day. Yes, it is. Up to the plate, 'cause it's time to be great.
So come on and embrace the new day. Come on and live life a new way. Don't stop till you reach the top. And while the haters keep hating, you'll be winning a race.